Y'all about ready? Okay. Morning, folks. You'll have to bear with me a bit. After the fourth or fifth day of the conference, the cumulative lack of sleep has rendered me a little more incapacitated than normal. But my name is John Baldwin, and I'm here to talk today about building and maintaining what I call a FooBSD. So before we go anywhere, I kind of need to explain what that means, since that's a rather generic term, I guess. First of all, what I'm planning to talk about is maintaining your own customized version of FreeBSD. And the little asterisk there is to indicate the fact that while this talk is very specific, perhaps, to FreeBSD, many of the techniques and things that I describe can be used with any system. But my experience is with FreeBSD, and I would rather not talk about things that I don't know. So, in that same vein, the kind of audience that I'm addressing is not so much the embedded world, because I don't have a lot of good experience there. What I have done over my career thus far has been more dealing with big collections of x86 servers. And so this is more targeted at that kind of world and that kind of model. In the context of what a FooBSD, or what I would call a FooBSD, the typical use case is if you're some company, you use FreeBSD locally to deliver some service or product, but you need to have some changes to the stock FreeBSD. Maybe you have customized hacks that aren't really suitable for public distribution, either because they're really gross hacks, which is very common, or perhaps it's some kind of private IP that your employer considers their secret sauce and they don't want to give it away. So you have to keep track of that thing. Sometimes you need a feature that's in normal, like in FreeBSD head, and FreeBSD has a conservative approach to ABIs and APIs and tries to maintain stability and stable branches. But if you are a more fly-by-the-seat-of-your-pants type of shop, you can tolerate more churn in your version of the OS. So you might backport features from a newer version of FreeBSD to an older branch. That's one of the reasons to do it. Finally, as far as the name FooBSD, in my experience, when primarily companies do this, they tend to give it some kind of customized name. If you work for the XYZ Widgets Factory, you might make XYZ BSD, or you might call it Widgets BSD. Although this approach can be problematic if you work for Net Incorporated or the Open Foundation Company or the Dragonflies RS or something like that. So with that out of the way, kind of the topics that I plan to talk about are how do you maintain this customized source tree that you have, the kind of mechanics of doing that. How do you handle installing this version of FooBSD onto your hardware, the machines that you need to maintain? And then how do you handle upgrading those machines? Kind of along the lines of what I said earlier, I'm not going to cover every possible tool for these jobs. I'm going to cover the tools that I've used. So in some ways, this talk is more of a survey of my experiences with doing this that you may or may not learn from. There are many tools I haven't used that I'm not going to cover because I don't have experience with them, and I don't feel qualified to make judgments on things that I have not used. So off to the source tree. So my first recommendation when dealing with a customized source tree is push as many of your changes upstream as possible. If it's not secret sauce or it's not a gross hack that can't be refined into a cleaner hack, then you're stuck with it. But anything that you keep in your local source tree gives you more merge pain in the future. And the really bad case that can happen is you have maintained some new feature or something, and it's not really your secret sauce, but some other person or some other entity or company provides the same feature in FreeBSD and you have to merge it back. That can be very painful and unfortunate because you may have slightly different semantics or slightly different APIs, and now it falls on you to resolve all those differences. So I see many folks nodding their heads severely at this. When possible, try to keep your local diffs minimal. I'm not saying this just with my FreeBSD hat because you want all your code. I'm saying this because it makes your life easier. Now, some of the techniques that I have used or seen used in places that I have worked so far are up on the slide, and I'll just go through those. The first technique that I have used is not a real technique. It's just on here for a starting point. And that is simply having a CVS checkout of some branch of FreeBSD and having local patches in that branch. This model is not sustainable. I think I did all of one OS upgrade with this model, and that was about it. It's not something that allows you to keep track of your changes and perpetuate them over newer versions of FreeBSD, but I guess it is a kind of base starting point. All the models that I've used that have been successful involve using some kind of source code control and having your version of FreeBSD, your FooBSD, being a separate branch off of FreeBSD. So you, in general, this involves some sort of scheme where you import the stock FreeBSD sources either from a stable branch or from head as a kind of vendor branch into your own source code repository, and then you have your own private branch off of this. I know many of the distributed virtual, I don't know the right name for the acronym, DVCS. Many of those systems allow you to kind of do this as the way, the nature that they work, but I don't have a lot of experience with those, so I can't speak to them as often. The one that I perhaps liked the most was a setup I had at a company where we imported CVS directly as a vendor branch into a Perforce depot and then used Perforce to manage our own branch of FreeBSD. The reason that I probably prefer this one is that in my experience, Perforce does a very good job of maintaining branches, especially long-lived branches. However, this one could be a lot of work to set up. In the case of this company, they have a lot of custom scripts and this big Perl daemon that runs all the time that checks out from FreeBSD CVS and imports regularly into Perforce, and it was a bit fragile. And it would not be something that I would want to sit down and write from scratch. More recently, something that I do is I have set up a system after FreeBSD switched to SVN. Using SVK, it's rather easy to mirror an existing SVN repository or a section of an existing SVN repository into your own private SVN repository and to then make a branch off of that. And I have, I'll have a URL, or I guess I don't have a URL on my slide, sorry. I have a blog post about it that I posted about a year ago with some more details. But the ease, or the benefit, I guess, primarily of this one is that it's very easy to set up. I think it involved all of about 2 or 3 SVK commands. And the other ease that I like is that once you have your branch set up, you don't actually have to use SVK to manage all the private branches off of it. You can use plain SVN for all of your local stuff, and you only have to use SVK in the case that you want to merge changes downstream. Now, one thing I should clarify is that I don't use SVK in this instance for merging changes upstream. That's still more of a manual process. Is that me, or is that something bizarre? Oh, okay. Finally, there are other solutions that I don't have familiarity with, and so I won't speak to them because I would probably be wrong. So once you have a source tree, how do you keep it up to date? There are a couple of different strategies for doing this. One that I would encourage you to do if you go down this path is to try to track stable or some active branch like head as closely as possible, perhaps pulling in updates on a weekly basis, or in some cases I've pulled updates multiple times during a week, or perhaps you could stretch it out to monthly. But if you import a version of FreeBSD or some other OS and you work on it and work on it, and 3 years later you decide to upgrade from FreeBSD 47 to FreeBSD 52, that can be a major world of hurt. There are a lot of changes during that time, and if you merge those changes slowly and incrementally, you can deal with every little merge may have a little bit of conflicts, but they're small ones to deal with. Whereas when you have a really big set of changes, it can feel like a mountain that you can't climb, an insurmountable task. As far as a naming scheme, if you do that, one theme that I've adopted and I've used in a couple of places now is that if I'm going to be merging changes fairly often, I also want to cut internal releases very often. Just because I cut an internal release doesn't mean I necessarily release it everywhere, but for my own purposes so that I can for example, if something breaks and I can walk back in time in history, if I have a lot of snapshots that are fairly often, it's easier for me to walk back in time and find what exact import from FreeBSD or what other bug caused the problem. So the scheme that I typically use is that I append the date of the time that I made the snapshot into the release name. So typically it looks like on the screen. In fact, I built a snapshot yesterday, which was a 7.3 something else 2010.05.13. So this scheme I've used at a couple of places, and it works fairly well. The other thing that I would encourage you to do for your own sanity is to maintain some sort of running change log that lists every snapshot that you do and kind of the list of the changes that you did in that snapshot. A key thing that I do in this case is not only do I list individual changes that where I work or where whatever project I'm involved with, the changes we make locally, but every time I do an import, I provide some sort of summary of things that changed in that import. For example, if we use a certain NIC controller and there were changes to that device driver during that import, Later, if I have a problem and I'm looking back through my changelog to try to figure out which snapshots might have broken the device driver, then I can easily find it. If I don't keep track of what things changed during my imports, that becomes a more daunting task. So as far as you have a source tree and you can now maintain the source bits, well, now we want to actually compile it and ship it out to boxes. So the easiest way that I have, well, I've used two different approaches, I guess, for this. The first approach is FreeBSD already has a process for doing this. It's a little obscure, I guess, but it is mostly automated, if a bit hacky. And that's simply the make release process. There's a release 7 man page you can read that tells you all the different variables you can set. You can apply local patches. You can, with the SVN support, you can actually now build a release from SVN using an arbitrary branch in SVN to build your release. You can do all sorts of other things. The benefits I find to this setup is that even though it can be a bit rough around the edges, it is already done, and you just have to run one command. It's pretty easy to write a script around it to make it all work. It also, even though it is FreeBSD's kind of specific release process, it is actually not tied to FreeBSD's installer. Although FreeBSD's installer wants this type of output if you want to use it, each of the little the install process builds several different tarballs and kind of splits them up into pieces for distribution, because back in the ancient days, you could put one little piece of a tarball on a floppy. Regardless, each of these sets, these big tarballs, has its own installer script. So if you have your own completely custom homegrown install solution, you can still use the output from make release to install the bits onto the box. The other alternative I have seen used and have had to maintain is that you don't do this, but instead you write all your own packaging process where you build world and you install it somewhere and you tar up certain bits into one tarball and you tar up other bits into another tarball and try to keep it all straight. If you can tell from the way I'm describing it, I would encourage you to not do this path unless you like pain. I think in the case of the company I worked with, they had adopted this before there was a really good release process in FreeBSD that was extensible. But it is possible, and in, depending on your case, it perhaps may be useful to do this. Now, once you have a release, if you have a lot of machines, say more than 10, you don't want to install them all by hand with a CD running around per machines and clicking on dialog boxes. This is very frustrating and annoying. So there are a couple of different ways that you can also achieve this. Sysinstall is an installer that receives a lot of derision in FreeBSD, much of it well-deserved. But it does have some limited ability to do scripting. And with a bit of creative thinking, you could actually make use of some other hooks to use much more advanced scripting with sysinstall so that you can do fairly complex and very customized things using sysinstall as basically a big engine to abstract the process of untarring bits onto your disk. Out of the box, and an out of the box with a standard FreeBSD release, this is not super easy to do, but you can add extended patches to do this, and I'll talk more about an example of doing this in a bit. One nice benefit of using sysinstall to do this is, as I mentioned earlier, the release process builds a bunch of tarballs, and you can run your own shell script to extract them. But if you do that, you have to do your own logic for managing how do I get those bits available to tar to put them onto the disk. For example, if I want to fetch them over HTTP or FTP or NFS or something like that. One saving grace of sysinstall is it does have an abstraction of some sorts for that. So you can easily configure it to point at NFS or something else. There's a gentleman who sent me patches recently to make it work, pulling files directly over HTTP if you don't want to run NFS in your colo, for example. And it can provide the abstraction layer for that makes it a little bit easier on your part. The other alternative is to, from the ground up, build your own entire install environment. And this can have some benefits. I've seen this done maybe with a completely custom MFS root with Pixie that has a much wider range of tools installed. You can use, in this case, this company where I worked at, because they had the system that was not tied to sysinstall, once GPT support was available in FreeBSD and you could boot from a GPT partition, I was able to add GPT support to the installer fairly easily. It was about 10 extra lines of shell script because things were already well scripted. So depending on how flexible you need things to be, this can actually be kind of nice. You can also have an environment that doesn't always boot directly into the installer. Sysinstall, by default, wants to kind of be in charge, which is okay if you're doing an install, but it's less well for like a rescue environment. So you can craft a different environment, for example, where you boot into a shell, and you can choose to invoke a command, or you can have perhaps an RC script that accepts parameters from loader.conf that may auto-invoke an install for you if you so choose. But you can also have the option of booting into a shell with several tools available. You can do RAID management. You can try to repair things. You have more of a fix-it environment variable, or a fix-it environment available. So we can give you several options in that regard. But it is a lot more work. So more details about how you can make sysinstall configurations a bit more scriptable and a bit more flexible to work with. Out of the box, sysinstall loads one single file that has a flat file that you're not supposed to modify while it's reading it, because it, of course, as a normal file, it reads it, opens it, and that's it. This means that if you use a single file, you have to hard code the disk device, you have to hard code the network device if you need to set up a network connection for NFS or FTP or something like that. There's many things that you're forced into hard coding, and this is how it ends up being not very flexible out of the box. But the way that you can get around that is that one feature that the installation kind of scripting language does have is that you can load an arbitrary, if you can give a path name to another file, that you can load and execute the commands in that file on the fly, as it were. So if you generate a file on the fly using another command and then load that command, you can then actually give sysinstall dynamic behavior and not all hard-coded behavior. So the way that I typically do this is I have a shell script that uses other tools and will generate some foo.config, and my main installation config file will run my command that generates the foo.config and then subsequently include and execute the commands from the generated foo.config. In many cases, to make this very useful, you need to build a custom release of some sort, or at least a custom memory file system root that has additional tools. Common tools that I've used include things like syscodel, things like dialog. So if you want to pop up your own dialog menus that look like the sysinstall UI, which is not the greatest model, but at least you can make the user experience consistent, you can make a custom menu. I've done this in the past so that we had a company that built about three or four different pre-configured types of boxes, and so the installation would pop up one menu after booting from Pixie, which was, do you want a box of type A or type B? And so the person could pick type A or type B and hit enter, and then it went, and it would do the rest of the install scripted. You can also use KMs to fetch environments from the kernel environment. This can be very useful because you can customize behavior by setting different variables in loader.conf. So for example, you could build a single memory file system root as part of your make release process. And when you're Pixie booting, you can set in the Pixie loader.conf a variable that tells the installation process, I'm using Pixie, so you should install over NFS. And in fact, maybe you should install over NFS to this location, which means that in different colos, I can have a different loader.conf. And if I don't have that variable set in my installation scripts, I may realize that actually I'm installing from a CD. So now you have the ability to use the same scriptable install where the main binary bits are unmodified and shared across CD installs or network installs in different colos. So I have more detailed examples online at a URL I'll give at the end, but this is one very simple example from something I currently use. Suppose I want to install onto a bunch of machines that have varying disk controllers and varying disk devices in those disk controllers. So maybe I have machines with an MFI RAID controller. Maybe I have machines that just have a plain SATA drive. And on some machines, the SATA drive is 80.0, and on some machines, the SATA drive is 84, and it changes between different machines. And I don't want to have to think about that. What I really want the installer to do is find the first drive in the system and install onto it. Or perhaps I know for different machines which drive I want to use, and I want to be able to override it so that depending on your MAC address when you Pixie, I may give you a different loader.conf that tells you which drive to use. Another example that you could do. So in this case, the main file that sysinstall loads to drive its automated scripting is called install.config. And so what I do is I tell it to run this shell script that I've installed into the memory file system root called dodisk. And the job of dodisk is to write out this file stand/disk.cfg into the memory file system. So I've had to truncate this script very much to fit on one slide. So much of the fancy logic is not present. So in this case, it handles the very simple case that I can set a variable install.disk in my loader.conf, so I could say install.disk equal 84 or install.disk equal MFID0 or whatever I want to call it. And we will fetch that environment, that setting from the environment using kenv, and then on the using plain old simple sh, I will actually generate the disk.config file using a kind of template but using shell variables to fill out the part that's actually dynamic. And then once that is done, the script returns. I now have the custom disk.config. It will install to whatever disk I specified on loader.conf. The full version of this script actually only does this. If you do not specify this, we'll actually use syscodel. It fetches a whole array of all the disks installed in the system, walks it, finds the first disk, and installs to that. So that you can install on any machine, and it automatically figures out which disk is right, and it just works. You can also do similar things with network setup. I have another script that works the same way to figure out which network interface I've booted off of if I'm using NFS. And in fact, it can fetch the MAC address from the Pixie environment that tells me which device, which network interface I booted over Pixie. I can use ifconfig. I can walk all the network interfaces. I can compare MAC addresses. I can find the one that was actually used to Pixie boot, tell sysinstall to DHCP over that, and reuse the same interface for my NFS connection. So now that we have this box installed, we need to upgrade the OS periodically to keep it up to date. Now, the source code control helps with actually managing all our conflicts. But actually getting the new bits onto the box is what we want to do now. So one approach to this is that every time you want to upgrade the OS, you can just reinstall the entire machine. If you have an easy way to replicate all of the custom settings on that machine, perhaps this isn't so bad. But in many cases, things are not quite well that worked laid out. For example, maybe you probably don't have something that maintains every customized setting for every server in your colo. At least most companies that I find do not, because they tend to grow these things organically over time. So you can't afford to just reinstall a box every time you want to upgrade. So how do we put a new world onto a box? Well, the typical FreeBSD way is to upgrade your source tree, do a make build world, and make install world with that source and OBJ tree. And in fact, this is what I see most commonly used in my experience. It does work. The one kind of downside is that NFS sucks, especially if you're doing it on a lot of machines for this type of thing. And make is very problematic. You do a lot more work to do an install world than if you were to untar a single OBJ file, because make wants to check dependencies and timestamps on things. And it can be very slow and involve a lot of network I/O. One thing I would like to do is to replace the install world process with a simple tarball that you extract, because that would be significantly faster. And in fact, typically when I've done installs based on extracting a tar over NFS, it can take 10 minutes. But an install world almost never takes 10 minutes over NFS. It's generally much longer. But the one wrinkle in that approach is that install world is not quite just putting bits on disk. It also does a couple of other things. For example, when it installs a runtime linker, it wants to move the existing runtime linker to ldelf.so.old and things like that. So there are some things that don't make it quite as simple as installing into a dester and tarring that up and then untarring it. And perhaps at some point I will get to a more cleaner way of detecting the other side effects of install world and be able to have a simple script to replicate those in addition to an untar. The other thing that would be really nice, and I perhaps did not upgrade my slide correctly, is using FreeBSD, a customized version of some sort of FreeBSD update or FreeBSD upgrade, because I can't remember which one it's called. Yes?
It's FreeBSD update.
Yes. Like I said, my slide is wrong. I have not had a lot of time to spend looking at this and getting it up and running. I have looked at it some. The current things that I see with FreeBSD update that make it a little problematic, at least for the environments I've used it, is I want to control my own release process. For example, I want to build my own release using my own set of things and then be able to point FreeBSD update at that and say, make your binary diffs based on things that I've already built, as the current scheme is that FreeBSD update wants to point at a tree, it wants to point at a patch and build all its own diffs and do its own and make release on its own. And quite frankly, I already have a lot of infrastructure to do my own builds. I need something that works kind of alongside a lot of the stuff that I've done rather than something that's in charge, which probably is not too hard to do. I just haven't had sufficient time to work on it. I do think that this approach would be very nice because FreeBSD update can do significantly less I/O over the network for upgrading machines in a colo. I just haven't had time really to dig into it in detail.
If I could just interject.
Sure.
All of the FreeBSD update build code is available.
Yes.
If you have a patch ISO I built, go build updates based on that release ISO with these extra patches added. So it should be able to do everything you want to do.
Well, the somewhat. I've looked at it, and it still wants to build a full release itself. And what I want to do is to not do that step. I want to say, I built a release, and I have release A, and I have release B. And I've already built it all. You just need to do a diff and not actually give you patches. Does that make sense?
Okay.
Because in my case, I have...
But it gets
trickier with managing things like Etsy, because some files change based on paths and date timestamps and things like that. And in my case, I have 80 snaps in a year. I don't have like three releases like FreeBSD might. So I have significantly higher volume of snapshots I want to handle. But it's something that I still need to look at. It's something I need to investigate ways to make it pluggable and ways to figure out what the right model is. So I still have a lot to investigate on that one. Now, the one thing that I found when you're using InstallWorld to update a machine is that updating Etsy can be a bit of a pain. Specifically, if you have 1,000 machines, you don't want to deal with some process that requires you to hit prompts on every single file that has a conflict that you need to update. That can take a long time. Or you don't want to have to be in the unfortunate process of feeding yes minus I or something to Merge Master and have it clobber some file accidentally. So there are several tools that I've found, existing tools that I've found that could kind of do this. The first one that I tried out and used was Merge Master, because it's already in the base system. It's recommended the thing to use for updating Etsy. And Merge Master does work fairly well in many cases, but it doesn't do a full three-way merge. So the limit of Merge Master's ability is that it looks at your current Etsy, and it looks at what a stock Etsy as of the world you just built is, and it tries to handle differences it encounters that way. But if you've modified a file, it doesn't know how to handle that in an automated fashion at all. Whereas, for example, if you're using a source code control system, and you've checked out a file from a source code control system, and you modify it, and then you do an update, the source code control system knows what the old version of the file that you had was, what the new version of the file that you are going to is, and what your version is. And it can look at all three files and figure out which changes you've made and where they are, and if they conflict with the changes made in the source code tree itself. And if there's no conflicts, it'll just happily update it, merge it all together fine without having any kind of manual user intervention. And Merge Master doesn't quite do that. It does handle a little better files that have not been locally modified. Those it does upgrade right away. The other feature that I do like about Merge Master is that it modifies your existing Etsy tree in place so that you don't have to worry about it updating files somewhere else and then manually having to copy them back over. And then one thing I guess I alluded to earlier is Merge Master somewhat insists on prompting the user interactively anytime it finds anything it doesn't know how to handle in the very simple cases. But for many installations, you often customize files in Etsy. And if I'm updating 1,000 machines, it'll have some non-conflicting change. For example, if I turned on PAM-SSH and Etsy PAM.DSSHD, it will be annoying to have to manually negotiate merging the change for the FreeBSD ID when I upgraded from one release to the next on all 1,000 machines by hand. And that's the type of thing I want to avoid. There's another tree imports called, or another tool imports called Etsy Merge. Etsy Merge does do a three-way merge. It does this by keeping track of the files from a stocked version of Etsy from the last time you built World and a stock version of Etsy from the new time. And similar to the way that the source code control system, when you do an update of your modified tree, does all the three-way merge, it does the same thing. The one thing I found a little bit annoying about Etsy Merge is that it insists on building a completely new copy of your Etsy tree, doing all the merge work there, and only after you've resolved any and all conflicts, kind of copying it back over. And especially the copying bits from one tree, for example, if you have modified files or new files that we don't maintain in source, like fstab, Etsy Merge has to copy those files and identify them into its new template tree and then copy them back over, even though they weren't changed, when it's done. And this, I prefer something that will kind of do as much as possible, and if there are conflicts, only leave those available to be resolved by hand, so that in the common case, you don't have to do anything as in a system, and if I'm updating a bunch of machines by hand. So after doing that, and then surveying those tools and trying and working with them, I decided to write my own tool. And so, so I wrote a tool called Etsy Update. It uses a three-way merge, similar to what Etsy Merge does or what your source code control system does. It updates the tree in place, similar to Merge Master, so it doesn't go through the hassle of copying a tree to somewhere else and then copying it back. And in the interest of minimizing manual intervention, it does a kind of best effort first pass. So if it gets a conflict, it kind of keeps track of the conflict when it encountered a merge, but it doesn't modify the existing file in Etsy. It just does as much as it can. And later, as a sysadmin, you can check to see if any of your machines had conflicts and resolve them in a manual process after that. But in the common case that you didn't have any conflicts and your upgrades all work seamlessly across your 1,000 machines without any manual intervention on your part. So I have a demo of sorts of this because I've sent mail to the mailing list and no one will try it. So I figured if I showed it all to you, maybe you would actually try it. If I hit the right keys, it'll work even better. There we go. So this little VM represents a FreeBSD machine that was installed from 7.2, mostly stock. I did install the source tree with it so that I can show you how you would get Etsy Update kind of up and going and kind of started. So one local change I've made is I've changed etsy pam.d system to turn on pam ssh because I find pam ssh useful, and it gave me something to change to show you how a merge would work. So in this case, Etsy Update needs a bit of a bootstrap before it can work. It needs to populate its initial ID of what it thinks your tree should look like so it can generate diffs and kind of do a three-way merge when we do an update later. So to do this, you run extract. And this kind of populates an Etsy tree similar to what Merge Master does, where it builds var temp temproot. Now, one nice thing that this tool does, I added as almost a debugging aid, and it turned out to be much more useful than I expected, is we can take a diff to see what you've modified in Etsy on your machine. And because I don't want to show you, even though it's encrypted or hashed, I'll exclude the password file. So in this case, we can see that because of the way Etsy Update works, I have some rather gratuitous diffs in the CINAHL configuration files. There are more details online about how you can work around that. And if you integrate this into your release process, these go away. But ignoring those, you can see here is my modified pam.d, so I can see what changes I made. I've turned on pam ssh. You can see that I have a user for myself that's in wheel, and I've installed perforce. Oh, you are? Okay. Well, the good news is there's no relevant. Oh, no, there are relevant diffs in those characters. Well, so apologies. I can't fix the screen very easily. Can you kind of see the pluses? It's a typical diff minus U. So you've got pluses and minuses showing you lines that are changed. Not much more to say. But suffice it to say, you can see what the diffs look like. I've added my host name so that DNS doesn't fail. Now, I'm going to fast forward in time, but I'm going to do this by switching VMs so I can get the right keys again. So in this case, I actually used CSUP. I pulled an updated source tree to update to 7.3 release from 7.2 release. I've gone ahead, built world. I installed my new kernel and rebooted with my new kernel and just finished an install world. So this is the step you would normally do a merge master. And this will fly by a bit quickly in too many lines. So one property, in case you haven't noticed, since switching to SVN, FreeBSD rather gratuitously changes every single FreeBSD ID file when switching between releases due to a quirk of the SVN to CVS exporter. Unfortunately, even if you use stock SVN, as I do now in my own FreeBSD that I currently work on. Because the FreeBSD tag in SVN includes the full path to the file, and every tag in SVN is a different path, in SVN, every single file and every single release always conflicts as well with the FreeBSD ID. Yeah, well, so Merge Master can handle, if a file, it can handle dash F, but it will not handle, for example, the PAMD SSHD, because more than the FreeBSD ID change.
Yeah.
So one thing I will do to kind of show you that I don't hose anything is I'm going to save a version of what the diff looks like now into a file. I've used this in development to kind of sanity check to make sure I don't break anything. So now I have something that looks much like before. And I'm going to T this so that I don't lose all the output. And so this is going to take the existing source tree and build a new VarTemp temp root, and it updates all the files. And it looks a lot like an SVN update as it goes through. So one thing this tool aims to do is it aims to not give you too much output or output that is easy for you to look at and read. Some of the other tools will spit out all of the build commands from make, and I log this all to a log file in case something goes wrong. But in the common case that you are tracking stable or something and three files change, you only get 3 lines of output. You don't have to wade through a lot of other stuff. So in this case, we can see that 7.3 added a file to rc.d, the static ARP file. In the case of the syndel configuration files, we actually got a conflict because of the differences, because of the timestamp being hard-coded into the file before. Once you've done an update, you can kind of see the results. If anything was really bad after your update, if you have conflicts. Etsy update also handles really bizarre edge cases. At least it'll warn you about bizarre edge cases. If FreeBSD changes Etsy foo from a directory to a file, it will warn you about that. If you haven't modified Etsy foo, it'll actually change it from a directory to a file for you. But if you've put some other file in Etsy foo that FreeBSD doesn't have in Etsy foo, it will leave it there to tell you that you have to resolve it. And Etsy update status would tell you about that at the end. So in this case, the model that I currently use is the output of Etsy update I don't really care about as much. But once I've done Etsy update on all my machines after they've been upgraded, I can check the status of any machines. And if the status file is not empty, I know I have something on that machine that has to be manually resolved. So once we have a conflict, it's important to note that the actual, unlike if I were using Subversion and doing a Subversion update or a CVS update, the actual file in etsymail, freebsd.cf, doesn't have a bunch of conflict markers in it. So I haven't hosed your system such that if you were to suddenly reboot, you would have config files that would no longer be parsable because they'd have conflicts merged in them. They're actually saved in another location until you resolve the conflict. So resolving conflicts is much like resolving conflicts with Subversion when you do an SVN update. I basically stole the UI from that. You can see the full list of commands. You can postpone, leave one for later. You can and choose to install their version of the file or mine. You can see the diff. In this case, I don't have a scroll lock on my keyboard, so if I did a diff, it would be bigger than the screen, and I wouldn't be able to show it to you fully, so I just won't do that for now. And in this case, I can choose to edit the file. If I choose to edit the file, then I get a conflict that looks much like a conflict in Subversion or CVS. So it tells me all three versions of the file, and I can choose which one is right, similar to that. But in this case, remember the right command, I'm going to install their version of the file because I have not actually locally modified my syndel configuration files. I have 4 of those to do. And so now if I run status, there's no other pending emergencies I need to handle. So now we can do a new diff. It will think for a while. And I don't know if you are adept at reading diffs of diffs. We will try this. So this will tell me what effective changes have happened to my Etsy, or what local customization, what changes have been made, if I can say this correctly, to my local customizations through Etsy relative to 7.2 that now that I'm running 7.3. The big one is that I no longer have conflicts in my sendmail files because I'm now using the stock version of the sendmail files and Etsy updates view of the world, which is most of this. You can see that it updated the source IDs automatically on some files like Etsy group that happened. The reason this shows up in the diff is that Etsy group has local modifications, and so it shows up as a line in the diff. But you can see from this that it did update the FreeBSD IDs for the password file and the group file, and that's it. And if we look at the new diff, I still have my change to PAMD, I still have my changes to group, and my various and my changes to other files. And that was it. My Etsy's up to date. Yes?
A question for you. Is this in the tree, and is there a manual page?
Yeah, there's a manual page, and there's regression tests and stuff. It is not in a tree, because I can't get anybody to test it. you didn't tell me anything. There is a manual page. In fact, I could go in a little off script. Well, if you read the emails.
I get thousands of emails a
day. I understand. I have it on my slide at the end, but I will show you anyway because I have the man page here. All the bits are right here in this Etsy update directory off my home directory. And there's even a HTML version of the man page that kind of explains more details about the logic of how it works and different things. It's rather complicated. Okay, so that's there. So, demo aside. So, this is basically the end of my talk, I guess. One thing I said at the beginning, there are a lot of other tools. There are other source code control tools. I'm sure other folks, in fact, I know other folks have handwritten tools for managing Etsy that are slightly more convoluted cases of other tools. Something I also completely bypassed because it's too hard is packages. Thankfully, in my role, I don't deal with upgrading the packages, and I'm very thankful I don't have to deal with that. There's lots of discussions ongoing about how best to deal with updating packages, but that's another ball of wax, and I don't have good conclusive ideas on how best to solve that problem. So finally, when I talked about customizing or automating sysinstall or doing more flexible scripting of sysinstall, you can find a kind of sanitized version of the scripts that I use in one current installation at this URL. You can look at the scripts that the domedia.sh actually figures out if I'm using NFS and if I'm using NFS, which network interface to use for DHCP. Otherwise, it falls back to installing from CD and kind of sets all that up in sysinstall. And dodisk is the one that actually figures out which disk device to use. There's the install.config is there as well and the whole kind of setup. Also, this is the location of Etsy update that we just looked at. And finally, I know it's a bit early. Do folks have any questions? Shoot.
You mentioned install, and I could just say the three sides, slides. I mean, it was good, John, but you're in the field, it's very difficult to install, upgrade platforms on a customer's site, especially going from, you know, a 6.x to a 7.x.
Yes. Right.
If you're just running it and running it, you're pressing enter, 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 and go, yep, it's all done.
Well, for one thing, there's like, Etsy update is a 1,000-line script, 1,000-line shell script, most of just comments, and I have about 4,000 lines of regression tests. but no, that's very relevant. I mean, one of my prior cases, I actually dealt with machines that were, I only had one-way communication to them. I had a way to talk to them kind of over the back, but I couldn't do stuff one way. So in the case of doing that, I largely had to make sure I replicated and tested any updates I sent locally before I ever sent them out over the air. And in the case of doing that, in that particular environment, I had a more constrained environment that I knew what my local customizations would be. So as a general solution to the problem, I don't think I have an answer. In a specific instance, if I was maintaining a specific class or type of appliance or machine, I might be able to offer ideas on how to do that, if that makes sense. I guess I would strive to make the differences very automatable or very repeatable. So, for example, I might actually want to do something where I would usually splat stock files over Etsy and then do a post-install fix-up that actually added customizations every time and not bother with something to try to emerge. Yeah. And one thing that will help is changing many of our tools to use more flexible ways of specifying configuration so that you don't have to modify the standard system files. For example, there were recent changes. There was a patch to make new syslog read multiple config files. So you can put config files for a port for new syslog into user local etsy new syslog.d or something like that and not have to actually modify etsy new syslog.conf. If we can have more work on that so that you could have custom files for a port or for a local software for syslog.conf, or other cases where you can avoid actually editing the kind of base system files, but it pushes much configuration into separate files that don't have to deal with conflicts. I think that is an approach that can help things scale a little better. Ken?
Just one caution on that. If you do write things that edit the stock files, make sure that they check to see if the edit's already done.
Oh, yes, yeah. I would probably wrap it into a, you know, untar the whole, like, stock unmodified version and then edit the files or something. Yeah, you would have to make sure you don't double edit and get yourself into trouble that way. Sean?
Could you talk about how to, during the build process, like, what, when you have a difference between your foo version and what you're building on, what's the best way to, you're building an OS.
Right. So this is made, in my world, this is substantially easier by the fact that I'm not doing cross-builds. And in many embedded appliance cases, you are doing cross-builds and things get more complicated, but perhaps simpler in some ways because you can have a kind of standard host environment. I tend to, for each major version of FreeBSD that I'm tracking, have a kind of dedicated build box for that major version. And perhaps also a per architecture if I'm supporting multiple architectures, and kind of have those boxes more or less track the version that I'm running. I know in some cases you have no choice but to do that, depending on how your build process works. But often FreeBSD preserves ABI well enough that you can have like a 7.2-ish box that will build 7.3 snaps just fine if you're using make release or if you're just doing build world. If I'm doing my own build world, you can have build world use a different different path and user source. So you can put your source tree on NFS, go to the CD to that directory and make build world, and then make sure you save the user OBJ tree on NFS somehow too. Perhaps you mount a direct NFS directory over top of user OBJ while you do your actual build. And then everything ends up kind of in one place that you can later remount when you do your install world. Something like that.
So there's no real obvious way to avoid the concept of golden machine in our universe right now?
Perhaps not quite. Make release actually kind of does a bit of job of this. If you want to do something more full-blown, where you kind of follow the make release model. So in make release, what you do is you install world into a chroot, and you make sure your chroot is pretty pristine so it doesn't set CPU type or things like that in make.conf. And then you actually do another build world inside of that chroot and that kind of clean environment to build the bits that become the release bits. If you wanted to do the same thing for building snapshots of a source and OBJ tree that you would then use to install over NFS for an upgrade, that approach would work as well. You just have to make sure that you can in fact do a kind of a cross build in that case. So for example, FreeBSD supports cross building a Spark 64 release on AMD 64. So it will build when it does the nested build world, it will build a cross compiler and do all that sort of thing for you. Yeah, in the case of build world, it's less clean, but you can use tricks to simulate the cleanness that release gives you. Any other questions? I see none, so feel free to go get lunch.